His metanias anix on me pilas zothotam por phrisigar toc nevma mu pros
We mentioned last week that it is a great art to learn to listen to the other person. Most people can talk a mile a minute, but they are not good listeners. I remember myself visiting a priest when I first went to Thessaloniki, and I went to discuss some things with him. I had some questions, and perhaps to confess, I think I was about 18, 19 years old at the time. And I had my troubles with fasting, anger, and some other passions. So I would begin to tell him about my challenges. And I would say, you know, Father, I get hungry at night and I become very tempted when I smell different foods. And he would say, oh, I never get hungry. Food doesn't tempt me at all. It's been years since I really had any temptations with food. Then I would say, well, when I am discussing things with other students, sometimes, you know, I get insulted and I feel very angry and I feel like hitting them. And he would say, oh, you know, I never have a problem with anger for years. That doesn't bother me at all. And no matter what I said, he would say how well he was doing in that area. And inside of me, I was ready to say, Father, I don't care about your virtues. That's not why I'm here. I'm here to tell you that I get tempted, I get angry, I get hungry at nights, I suffer from gluttony, and all you can do is tell me about your accomplishments. Of course, I never said these things to him out loud, but the fact is that he was not able to help me. He was a very virtuous priest, a good man, but he did not know how to listen and sympathize with the weakness of the other person who may not be at his level. Saint Nicodemus the Hagarite has written a whole book called Exomologitarion to help confessors and spiritual fathers to help them listen and to become better listeners and stay totally focused and totally unresponsive no matter what comes out of the penitent's mouth. Now, as a confessor, you know, you may have a callous criminal in front of you, a mass murderer. You are not permitted to change expressions or turn pale or panic or become shocked. You must develop what the card players call a poker face. In other words, you cannot show any expression at all because the person across from you is watching your every movement, your every expression, which will make them decide if they will continue to do a partial or a total confession. And now I will tell you something comical from the early days here in Cyprus at the monastery of Macheras. Some old beautiful couples were coming to confession for the first time, very simple and very sweet people. They would call me Daskale, teacher. This is a beautiful remnant from our tradition. The priest, the confessor, was also the teacher of the scriptures and the word of God. So the old Yaya would come in and suggest, Daskale, I'm not good at this. Can you help me by asking me questions? So I tried to help them. And I would ask, now, did you ever lie to anyone in your neighborhood or, you know, any of your neighbors or friends? Well, yeah, come to think of it, of course, I've said a few lies. Everybody lies. I'm sure everybody does that. Well, did you ever have an argument with your husband? Well, yeah, now and then. Did you ever steal anything from someone, like a gardener or someone's farm? Daskale, do I look to be that kind of a person? Did you, why did you get this idea about me? Sometimes I would say, you know, I would dare to say, did you ever did anything outside of your marriage or before your marriage? Daskale, how could you? How can you possibly think of something like this? What kind of a woman do you think I am? So they were offended. They wanted me to ask them questions, but they were not ready to listen. And now I will tell you something even more comical from a gentleman who came to the Holy Mountain. He came for confession, and at the time I was a very new priest monk, and I was extremely shy as a confessor. I remember when listening to confessions of lay people, I would turn the light ever so dim. We used to confess them in a nearby chapel next to our monastery. And I would have a small kerosene lamp, and they could hardly see me at all. It was very dark in the confessional. And one of these days, an older gentleman walked in to confess, and he started saying, "Oh, Elder, it is so wonderful that I finally made it here to Mount Athos. I used to dream for years about this. I always wanted to come up here to open my heart to an advanced and mature elder with a long white beard, old and experienced." Now I could hardly keep from laughing. I just said, "Yes, my son. Where are you from, my son?" "Well, Father, I'm from Cyprus, and you know, in small places like that, everybody knows each other, and for that reason, I really didn't want to go to one of the local priests for obvious reasons." And inside of me, I said, "Well, if you only knew." Anyway, he did his entire confession from the years of his youth up until now, fully confident that he was confessing to an old gray-haired confessor. Of course, I didn't burst his bubble, but not only he was from Limassol, but he happened to be my next-door neighbor. Now, if you have to go to the end of the world to disclose some of your human errors, then the chances are that you don't have the courage to disclose any of your shortcomings to your spouse or to hear them disclose anything adverse either. So it is a great matter, my young friends, to do away with our idealistic preconceptions, the idea that nothing negative will ever happen to us. And those things only happen to other people. And we need to be very careful of our ultimatums and characterizations of other people. Years ago, a young newlywed woman announced to her friends in the church hall, and everybody, a few people were listening. "Now, I told my husband repeatedly, and by now he knows it very well, if he ever betrays me once, even once, it's all over." Well, under these circumstances, do you think your husband will ever have the courage to discuss any of his difficulties with you? Of course, he'll never tell you anything. If he ever has a problem, you know, he'll go tell someone else. Likewise, our children listen to our reactions and expressions when something negative comes up. The teenage girl comes home and says, "Mom, guess what? I can't believe it. One of my 14-year-old girlfriends just got pregnant." And the mother, without thinking much, says, Oh my God, if that would ever happen to you, I will have a heart attack. I couldn't handle it. It would just kill me. Or your daddy will be totally heartbroken." It is statements like this that drive teenagers to take matters in their own hands. Years ago, a number of high school teenage girls in Greece had formed a sort of a union. They had taken out their own insurance policy. They took that in their own hands. They created a fund to help each other with the cost of an abortion if and when that need would ever arise, so they would not have to tell their parents. They would not have to get their parents involved. And a few years ago, a young woman came to the monastery of Macheras for confession. She needed to discuss some things. She was in trouble. And among other things, she needed my help. And what kind of help do you think she needed? She told me, "Father, I want you to invite my mother here so you can tell her that I'm pregnant. I don't want to have an abortion, and the man responsible does not want to marry me." And I said, "Did you try to tell your mother? Tell her. I think we need to have the ambulance present before I tell her. She will not survive this." Well, a few days later, the poor mother came to the monastery along with her daughter, and we began with the regular small talk, and what kind of work does your husband is involved with, and how many children do you have, and other small talk. And she was, of course, very nervous, which is understandable. And I said, your daughter had a relationship for a while. She used to go out with someone." And she says, "Well, so what? What's going on? Is she pregnant?" "Well, what if she is? What do you think we should do?" "Oh, she must get married right away." "But that's not possible. This man is not ready for marriage." "Well, then she has to have an abortion." "But your daughter doesn't want that." "Okay. My dear lady, we have to have another solution." "Well, no. If he cannot marry her, then she has to have an abortion." "My dear lady, this is not a very, very good idea." And now the woman turns to her daughter. And of course, the daughter is somewhat relieved because the mother is still breathing and she didn't drop dead from shock. And the mother says, "Didn't I tell you to be careful? Didn't I tell you?" "Yes, mother, you told me. But we told me when it was already too late." "Well, you must have an abortion, or I will tell your father and your brother, and they'll just go find this culprit and break his legs." "Mother, get a hold of yourself. These are not wise solutions. I made a big mistake by getting pregnant, and I don't want to kill the child inside of me. I was really touched by the bravery of this young woman who decided to keep her baby even under these difficult family circumstances." Now, a lot of these complications can be avoided if we train ourselves to become good listeners, to teach and instruct, but to also learn the science of listening to our children. And as the head of our family, the husband needs to listen to his children, to his wife, with calmness, sobriety, and without hysterics and ultimatums. They must not feel threatened. And they will, if you are expecting them to be flawless, infallible, and angelic. It takes great technique to help our family members to uphold God's commandments, to encourage them to live the gospel, but at the same time to remind them about the weaknesses of human nature. And anything can go wrong in the absence of the grace of God. We need to be especially careful to help our children with their tendency to be judgmental with the mistakes of some of their classmates or other people or friends. My son, your friends do this because they don't know any better. They may not be open to the grace of God at this point. And the reason why you may have avoided some of their downfalls up to now is due to God's grace and protection. If we stop being close to God, we will probably act much worse than these neighbors of ours. So if we want our spouse or our children to stay truthful with us and transparent, we must be prepared to bear anything that comes out of their mouths without convulsions and shrieks. Of course, this is not easy because it presupposes the powerful virtues of meekness and humility. We must accept the fact that we live in a decadent society, in a world of apostasy, where there's nothing more normal than sin. Now, this doesn't mean that we will lower our expectations. We will struggle to instill the proper antidotes in our family members. Knowing in advance, our human efforts are not always adequate. Above all, we will entrust the safety and well-being of our family to the protection of God. The greatest inheritance parents can give their children is their holy example. We can teach, instruct, correct, plead, but if we don't live the faith, if we don't live the gospel, if we don't pray daily, then visiting a church every Sunday will not solve all our problems. We often hear this refrain among parents and grandparents, "Oh, she or he was just a good child. They were such a good child. They were in the altar all the time. They were in church services." Yeah, that's wonderful. But these kids most likely did not see the continuation of these teachings in the home. If children see the parents practice forgiveness, compassion, understanding, and keep their composure during difficult and challenging situations, then it becomes very possible for them to share some of their own challenges with their parents. I have met many spouses and children who suffer on a daily basis because they cannot open up to their husbands, their wives, or parents. They don't dare to rock the boat. The husband or the children do not even suspect that their mother or their wife is ready to collapse from neglect, the load of work, and lack of appreciation. They run in and out of their home like roommates without the slightest clue that one of their family members is terribly unhappy. She picks up after everyone every day, day in and day out, without any help whatsoever. And at some point, she feels exhausted, neglected, even used, totally unappreciated. And if this is not resolved, then she may become emotionally vulnerable and even exposed. Many women become unruly under these circumstances, not because they enjoy this type of thing, but out of desperation. They're crying for attention. And when they did not receive this attention from their husband, then they can make a mistake. And of course, you know, they are at fault. But the main perpetrators for these falls are usually the husbands who did not take care to recognize the signs and the daily subtle comments of their wives' tiredness or exhaustion or general dissatisfaction. And then when something happens, then the husbands become irate, they can't cope. They don't want to come home, and someone can easily see that there's a problem here, and the problem is that people don't know how to be transparent with their feelings. They don't live a life of truth and openness. They like to pretend. They tell themselves that tomorrow things may be different, things will change, and they continue to live a life of a lie, and they don't know how to be truthful. And that's why the church hastens to correct such possibilities and prays to seal this betrothal, this relationship, with truth and love. This is why, my young friends, who you are now might be thinking of marriage, and some of you may already be spoken for, you must try as best as you can to free yourselves from, you know, these harmful preconceptions. If your fiancé or your better half senses or gets the impression that you are easily wounded and extremely sensitive, that you are setting yourself up for lack of transparency and truthfulness in your marriage. He feels that the truth will do irreparable damage to you and your relationship with him, then he will certainly keep things from you because you created the presuppositions for these types of lies. When a time comes that he needs to open up with one of his problems, he will not come home. He will end up at a local bar. He will be telling his problems to the barmaid until 2 in the morning. I can't go home. Why can't you go home? Well, I gambled all my money away at the racetrack. Well, don't worry. Just go home and tell your wife. And if she's smart, she'll let you sleep in the shed. And in the meantime, bring you some hay. And might as well buy you a saddle and some bridles, since you love horses more than your family, obviously. Sure, if you spent $10,000 at the track, you need to be treated like a horse, since you lost your human logic. So you tell this man, listen, my son, just go home and tell your wife the truth. No way. He can't face his wife. He can't face his family. He can't confess his problems to them and his particular fault. He cannot disclose this addiction. He will borrow, lie, get loans. He will live a hypocritical lifestyle. He will become a wreck of a man, and he will face a terrible impasse. And all this because the element of truth and transparency has not been cultivated in the marriage early on. Things can be so different when you convince and make each other believe that there's nothing in this life that we cannot handle together by the grace of God. I want you to know that I will always be there for you, and there's nothing at all that will change the way I feel about you. This is spiritual love. The love tied to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Love that does not seek its own. Love that forgives all. Love that covers all. And love that never fails. A love energized and filled and filtered through the love of God, as we said so many times. All other loves, no matter how electrifying may seem to be initially, will fizzle out and dissolve with the slightest provocation. Thank God we do have such couples and such families. I have met a number of parents who inspired this great air of transparency and truthfulness in their families with wonderful results. Parents who heard their children's problems and challenges with calmness, patience, sobriety, and they stood by their children and tried to direct them towards wellness. Children can face huge problems today, as we all very well know. If they can share these burdens with their family, then the load becomes much lighter. They will struggle, but they will not be crushed. They will feel some relief, and they will find the strength to go on. Years ago, I traveled to England, and I stayed with some family with a television and cable and all the amenities, of course. And in a situation like that, you can't just run and hide in your room, so you have to visit and spend some time with the hosts. So there was a documentary on television about a certain married woman, who had a cyberspace fling. In a few months, she was totally paralyzed by this demonic passion and totally ignored her 3 children and her family. She was in shambles. She would stare at her computer screen for 10, 12 hours a day for at least a year. I couldn't believe the strength and the quality of her husband's soul. He persevered in humility, hope, and love, running the kids to school, cooking for them, being Mr. Mom and Dad at the same time. And 4 months later, she removed her husband from the bedroom. And this poor man stood like a giant during this daily assault. No attacks, no ultimatums, no temper tantrums. He was sad, heartbroken, but he continued to reassure his fallen wife with this unbelievable statement that brought tears to my eyes. Honey, I love you as much as you love him. Finally, after a year, she decided to go spend a week with her new idol to get it out of her system. It turned out that the grass was not greener on the other side, and this woman returned to her family and reconnected with her husband. This man, by the way, did not seem to have a particular religious orientation, at least it didn't seem that way in the documentary. and he was certainly not Orthodox, but behaved like a saint indeed. Now, I realize that this is somewhat extreme, but it is good to know the human potential and the power of God's image in mankind. The feeling of love is the most powerful emotion in man. It is the essence of his existence, since he's made in the image of God, and God is love, of course. That's why during a time of the betrothal, you must be really sure, 100% sure, that you are ready to commit yourself to the other person before you express your love to him or to her. If you're not totally sure, if you have some doubts, you must take your time and you need to be truthful with the other person. It is best to let things evolve slowly and with much caution in the beginning than to come out with promises and some wishful thinking only to have all these things evaporate in the near future. To find out that, after 6 months to a year, that you really don't love that person after all. And that can be very, very painful to the other person. This is not serious behavior, and it lacks the characteristics of truth and love. Your relationship must be built on truth and love without the common sicknesses that overtake some people during this period. The illness of jealousy with all the deplorable inquisitions. Who was that on the phone, and where did you go last night, and I couldn't reach you, I couldn't find you, and why did you not return my call? All these illnesses will not help your relationship because they lack truth, and they certainly have nothing to do with love. We mentioned before that jealousy is not love. You are not jealous because you love her. You're jealous because you don't know how to love. Jealousy is an illness of the soul. What are you afraid of? The fact that you're afraid shows that you are full of insecurities, failing to understand that you love a mere human being. You're not in love with an angel or something unchangeable and eternal. You love a man or a woman, which means that this person will begin to gain some weight, to get old, change, become ill, die. And before all these things, they might even tell you, listen, I just don't want you anymore. I don't want to continue a life with you. Don't we hear about such things all the time? We hear about these things every day, of course. Then why do we want to base our entire existence on the feelings of the other person, which are not at all permanent but conducive to change? We must begin with a premise that the person next to us is not a perfect and absolute being, but it carries an expiration date. If we don't fully digest these realities, then we are setting ourselves up for psychiatric visits, nervous breakdowns, and plenty of antidepressants. People change, they become bored, they get used to each other, not to mention midlife crisis. A number of things can go wrong. In this life, even holy people have challenges, as we will read, as we read in the wonderful true stories of Alexander Papadiamandis, the great Greek pious writer of the 19th century. In one of his short stories, he writes about a couple in one of the villages of Skiathos, the island of Papadiamandis. The husband's name was Nicholas, and he was married to this wonderful holy woman called Seraino. Nicholas was the archon, the most powerful man of the village, and the envoy to the Turkish government. He was wealthy, hot-tempered, and quite ruthless. Once again, he was married to a holy and beautiful woman by the name of Seraino. Now, Seraino was not only getting older, but she suffered from sterility. She couldn't give him any children. And her husband had no major problem with this until he began to lay his eyes on the beautiful, rosy-cheeked, 30-year-old Leiluda across the street. Leiluda was pure, innocent, an unsuspecting orphan with no relatives except an uncle who did not bother much with her. So after Nicholas began to desire her, all of a sudden, Serainos' inability to give him children became unbearable. So he orchestrated everything with the Turkish government, the Turkish authorities. He hired a priest with the necessary bribes and threats. And at the end of the day, he divorced Serainos and married Leyluda. He told Serainos to bring Leyluda to the beach chapel for a vigil. After the vigil, he ordered Serainos to return to their home, and he escorted his surprised new bride-to-be on a Turkish love boat. Serainos returned home, and she heard the three celebratory cannon shots from the Turkish boat, which signaled the end of her marriage. She ran to her icon corner and prayed all night for her own emotions and also for the newlyweds. She prayed for their well-being and for God to bless them with many sons and daughters. The next morning, when the newlyweds knocked on a door, she ran and blessed them. Now Leyluda was in tears, begging for forgiveness. Forgiveness? Don't think of it, my daughter. God bless you. And Nicholas, please allow me to stay in your home so I can help Leyluda with the housework and the sons and daughters that she will give you. The ruthless and harsh Nicholas could hardly hold back his tears, and he said, "You are certainly a holy woman, Serainos, illumined by God." Serainos became the housekeeper and often mediated and pleaded with Nicholas so Leyluda would be spared all the beatings that she collected during their 20 years of marriage. Serainos helped the newlyweds with their four sons and four daughters, which she helped raise as her own. 12 years later, she died, and 3 years after that, they exhumed her body according to the local custom. Those present were amazed by the sweet fragrance of myrrh that filled the air. Serainos reached sainthood from her unconditional sacrificial love that bears all, forgives all, a love that never fails, a love much different than today's shallow romantic love stories and hedonistic romances full of misconceptions, fantasies, and lies. We live in a world today that thrives in falsehood and delusion, hypocrisy and illusion, like the illusion of today's weddings. You know, I don't go to weddings. Sometimes I watch them all from my window here at the Metropolis. When couples begin to drive up to get married here at the Metropolis, and since I stay on the second story, sometimes I watch to see what's going on. And I see some things that are just unbelievable to me. You know, I often get a glimpse of the events that unfold before the beginning of the sacrament. And I see this falsehood, this illusion. People are really living an illusion today. Now, I could be wrong. I don't know. Maybe I need a psychiatrist. But this is what I see. A total illusion. Fake smiles, fake laughs, fake kisses, cameras and photographs, fake promises from a groom who spent the night before at a bachelor's party. The entire event is laden by a bunch of lies. The groom will climb all the way to the top of the 100-foot tower belt to yell, "Rula, I will love you forever." Yeah, you'll love her forever, I'm sure. Well, sometimes there's a military wedding, and the friends of the groom will extend their swords so the newlyweds will pass underneath. And, you know, just everything to make an impression. All this shows that something has gone terribly wrong. We live in an illusory society, illusory TV shows and advertisements, and we bring this falsehood in our church life and sacraments. The emphasis of the wedding service falls on all the external, the artificial, and the non-essential. And where the sacrament begins, no one really knows what's taking place. No one pays attention. They're all focusing on a wedding dress and the areas that it doesn't dress, the flower girls, the bridesmaids, the priest is doing his professional work. He mumbles through the prayers to get them over with, since no one is really listening. No one cares. It is very seldom that you find a couple or two who really display a genuine interest in the real and spiritual beauty of this sacrament. And I believe this has to do with all the plasticity around us. We are living in a very plastic and artificial society. Nylon and polyester clothing, plastic shoes, plastic utensils, plastic flowers, plastic surgeries, plastic noses, pl